And we're back.
Live here from Whitman Airfield in Oshkosh. A beautiful morning. Airplanes are moving around.
Oh, yeah. People are wandering around and things are happening here. It is a beautiful sunny day. Come on down if you're close by.
They're starting to park airplanes where the airplanes are normally parked now. The mud levels have finally dropped. The ground's firming up. And the taxiway temporary parking is starting to thin out a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Everything's coming together real nice. Mother Nature is definitely redeeming herself for last week's rain festivals.
She just wanted to make sure the grass was green for everyone.
Yeah. Well, she did that. Thank you, Mom.
We have
Walt Fricke here today with the Veterans Airlift. Good morning, Walt.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Doing very well. Drying out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I noticed you left your hip waders back at the campsite.
Did that.
That's a 4T6 is taking off along with a chase plane.
It's the Aeroshell team. They must be going out on a photo mission this morning or something.
That's what it looks like.
Yep, they're going to have fun. Walt, we have some information here on an organization that you helped to create, Veterans Airlift. And we'd like to talk to you about your experiences and everything with this. First off, we understand that you are a Vietnam veteran.
That's correct.
All right. And where were you based?
I was based in Benoit, Vietnam, just north of Saigon. I was an Army helicopter pilot at the ripe old age of 19. Spent my most of my first tour in Vietnam before I turned 20. I was back in the States when I turned 20.
What were you flying?
I flew Hueys, troop lift slicks, they call them, combat assault helicopter, where we flew 10 helicopters in sort of a staggered trail formation and put a platoon of troops on the ground for combat assault.
Which meant you were always flying into hot LZs.
That's right. It was almost, they weren't always hot, but the potential was always there for them to be hot. And I'd say probably, one out of three we had a hot LZ, meaning someone was shooting at us, in addition to it being 95 degrees and humid.
That had to be pretty hairy there, not only with the density altitude, but also the fact that bullets are flying your way. What did you guys do to try to avoid the enemy gunfire?
Well, you couldn't really avoid it. In fact, they taught the Viet Cong to shoot helicopters much like shooting ducks, except that you didn't have to lead them. So there wasn't much we could do. We had 60 caliber or 30 caliber machine guns, M60s, mounted on each side of the helicopter, so the outside of the formation would be firing ground suppression fire from those to keep their heads down, and then we had gunships that prepped the LZ and in another attempt to keep their heads down while we got the troops down on the ground. And of course, we didn't spend much time on the ground. We would touch down, but the approach was slow and anxiety producing.
Slow.
Yep.
I had a ride on a Huey not too long ago at the Baraboo Air Show, about a month ago. And it's an interesting ride. I was impressed with the horsepower on that thing. It's got a fair amount of fizz to it.
Yep, it does. And of course, we flew them fully loaded. Generally, 2,000, 2,500 pounds over gross. Many days. So, running takeoffs
and fully loaded.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the military load.
Yeah, the military spec.
Exactly.
So when were you in country?
1968. My license plate says Benoit, class of 68.
Oh, wow.
So I flew a slick for about 2.5 months and then was made aircraft commander. But at the time, I was sort of conned into a job that looked pretty glamorous. It was called Smokey. That's my nickname today. The call sign is Smokey. Smokey was a single ship operation that had a 50-gallon tank of smoke oil, airshow smoke oil, that was pumped into the exhaust and left a large smoke trail down the side of the LZ to occlude the LZ so that they couldn't see to shoot at the troops as they landed and disembarked. So Smokey would fly down alongside the flight, leave a smoke trail, maybe cross across the front if there's a tree line, and then hang around the area with a 50 caliber machine gun mounted on its side to assist in the ground operations. And that looked like a lot more exciting job than flying slicks after being an old hat 2.5 months at it. So I transitioned to the smoke ship The aircraft commander then was a second tour W-2, had grown up a little bit, and he convinced me that this was the best job in the outfit, and I found out later it was so he could get out of it. It was a volunteer job.
The phrase, sold you a bill of goods, comes to mind.
Yeah. And, of course, I passed along the tradition and sold it to someone else when I moved on to gunships about 3 months later.
Wow. So here you are on a smoke ship. And you're the only one out there, which means
target number one.
Target number one, exactly. Was that hairier than a lot of the other missions?
Yeah, in fact, that's why I finally resigned my tour and moved on to gunships, because it was particularly one day, the last day I flew Smokey. I always wanted to fly gunships. I was trained for gunships in flight school, and when I got to Vietnam, I said, I'm ready to fly. And I had 2 weeks of gunnery training, so I thought I was qualified to fly gunships. And they said, no, son, we need you in slicks. And then I earned my way into Smokey, or got conned into Smokey, but then earned my way to fly gunships. And it was after about 3 months of flying Smokey that we had a particular insertion that sort of went awry. We had we had cornered an NVA battalion, I think, in the woods, and we put in a company of Vietnamese Rangers to take care of it. And they were quickly surrounded, and we had to extract the advisor. And a friend of mine that went in to extract him got shot up very badly. I was following him in to smoke the LZ, and he pulled out with something like 60 or 70 bullet holes in the helicopter, he estimated, and left the LZ with his co-pilot and door gunner both wounded, severely wounded. I think his crew chief was as well.
Wow.
We don't know that for sure, but... I followed him out of the LZ, tried to get him to set down the helicopter because it was leaking fluids big time, fuel and oil. And I was right underneath him, behind him, and said, put it down. And the CO was saying, no, he can make it back to Dao Tiang. And we were having this argument over the air when his engine quit. And he went into a 180-degree turn and didn't really auto-rotate it. Just he slowed the helicopter down. I learned later that he had been shot in the foot, so his feet weren't on the pedals, really. And he was sort of in shock, just trying to hang on, and he flew it into a triple canopy jungle, and the helicopter disappeared into the jungle with the blades coning up at about 40 degrees, slowed way down, no auto rotation. In other words, he didn't push the collective
down again.
And understandably, he went through the triple canopy jungle, and there was a large explosion of flames that came up through the jungle. We thought for sure all had been lost, but I followed him down and landed in a little field right behind them. I find out 25, 30 years later, against direct orders over the radio, not to land. I didn't hear them because I was arguing with the CEO at the time, and so I was probably talking when he was talking. Landed, my crew chief and door gunner both bailed out of the helicopter before we touched down, over gross weight, in a landing that bent the skids of my helicopter. They jumped before we hit the ground to save the weight. Should we jump? And the last minute I said yes, and they jumped probably 10 feet off the ground with their M60s, got off the helicopter, lightened it enough that we didn't destroy the helicopter when we landed. They went in and pulled amazingly. The aircraft commander had been spared in the fire. When the helicopter exploded, it was sliding forward. It blew the windshield out. He had been shot in one leg, and the armor plating came down and broke his femur. And he pulled himself out over the nose of the helicopter and was lying on the ground underneath the fire, protected by the chin bubble of the helicopter.
Wow.
When my door gunner and crew chief got to him, and they pulled him out of the jungle. And in fact, both were submitted for Silver Stars for their actions, because they climbed right over an enemy bunker to get to him. And we were on the ground, sitting on the ground, waiting for them. And to get to medevac him out. I got out of the helicopter myself and turned to the new co-pilot who'd been in country for 2 weeks, and I said, I want you to take off and orbit, because we were a prime target for mortars sitting there waiting. So I want you to take off and orbit, and when you see us come back out in the clearing, come back in. And the look on his face told me that was a bad idea. He was completely white. His eyes were as big as saucers. He was in shock.
Yeah.
And I said, no, stay here. And so we dragged the Russ out, put him in another helicopter that had landed, so we could get him out of there, because we wouldn't have been able to carry the weight, and medevaced him. So we saved one. We saved the aircraft commander. The other three, unfortunately, were burned in the crash. Well, that was just the beginning of the day. By the end of that day, I had decided that it was time to retire as a smoky.
Yeah, no kidding.
And told the CO that night, I think I've earned it. I want to fly gunships. He said, you're right, you have. Tomorrow you're a gunship driver. So thinking that was the safe route home because I could shoot back with a lot of armament.
A lot of firepower.
I began my tour as a gunship pilot, which ended 35 days later when a rocket exploded outside the cockpit and took my foot off. So that was the end of my Army flight career. Ended up in the hospital in Fort Knox, where they managed to salvage my leg. When the rocket hit, it actually clipped everything but the Achilles tendon. My foot landed in my lap backwards, and I was sure that it was gone. But having read as a kid a book about Douglas Bader, a World War II pilot who flew with both legs missing, my mother gave me that book when I was 12 years old because she had a brother who was an amputee, and she didn't want me to be afraid of him, so we were young kids, and she said, here's a good book. She knew I liked flying and aviation. I read this book about Douglas Bader, and the amazing thing is that when my foot was laying in my lap, the first thing I thought about was, I can still fly. It's okay.
There you go.
That's a pilot, true. Yep.
Well, that's an amazing story. I can't even imagine what it was like to be there. We were both young kids.
How bad was the helicopter hurt if that took your foot off?
You know, I think they lifted the helicopter out. We landed, fortunately, there. We were operating very near the Cambodian border, and there's a little fire support base, a little artillery base, not 2 minutes away from where we were inserting these troops. And we managed to get to the fire support base. The amazing thing is that my door gunner, who was right behind me, had taken shrapnel in the chest. He cracked a couple ribs, and he had a chicken plate, they called it, this armor plate, that took the impact, but it cracked his ribs. He had, within a count of 1, 2, 3, had pulled the pin on my seat, on the front of the seat, rotated my seat back to where my back was on the floor of the helicopter, feet up in the air, had his belt off in a count of 2, tourniquet on count of 3, like 1, 2, 3, that fast. He saved my leg.
Right, you would have bled to death.
I heard later. You know, of course, blood and bone fragments all over the cockpit, and my platoon leader was flying. This was my day off. It was my day off, and my platoon leader were going down to fly near the Cambodian border, and he said, "I want some experience in the left seat. Will you come?" I always flew on my day off, and. So I went with him, and it was I was riding co-pilot seat, left seat, and he sort of freaked out, panicked, and pulled a little too much pitch, and headed for the barn with the helicopter, and he was starting to bleed off RPM, and my right foot, I reached up and the cyclic has a trigger switch for the mic,
mm-hmm.
and I could see that he was losing control of the helicopter, and I reached up with my right foot and tapped the microphone with my right foot and said, "Lee, it's okay, just calm down, I'm okay, because he thought I was dead. I mean, there was a mess so that got him back into shape, and we landed at this little fire support base, and there happened to be a doctor there visiting the fire support base, and he got in a medevac helicopter with me, and they shipped me off to a MASH hospital, and I was out of there.
Well, we're going to take a quick break on that note.
Yes, we are.
And we'll be right back to continue the story and the natural outgrowth of the story, which was called now the Veterans Airlift Command.